The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Negandhi here with you, and it's been a long week. We were going to tape a podcast yesterday, which was Thursday. Didn't feel like it was right, so we called it off, and I'm glad we did because we saw a reaction from the college football world after the shooting of Jacob Blake. And, you know, the anger and the frustration, the emotions building up, and you know, teams have responded. A handful of college football teams yesterday deciding to not practice and get the chance to open discussion as a group inside locker rooms or wherever they may do inside the facility. And I think that's important, the dialogue and discussion and people listening in a world like that we live in today. So on this podcast, we got a variety of different topics. Desmond Howard's going to join us, Heisman winner and part of College Football Game Day, and get his thoughts about how he would look at the Heisman this year. Some of the names outside, of course, Trevor Lawrence, considering we have three power conferences in the conversation. We'll also talk to Des about the Big Ten and, you know, the lawsuit against the Big Ten from some Nebraska players. But also, while taping this podcast, we have some news that reports are coming in from a variety of national reporters discussing the idea of the Big Ten coming back. And a Big Ten coaches meeting, according to Bruce Feldman, was going on late this morning on this real possibility that they may reverse course and play later this fall. We didn't get the chance to talk to Des about it, but that is at least coming our way here before we put out this podcast Friday early afternoon. We will see how this plays out. And on Monday, Herb Street's going to join us, and we're going to talk in depth about the college football season and the concept of maybe the Big Ten coming back in the fall. And if they were to come back in the fall, I would anticipate it would be the idea of October, considering practice time and getting everybody ready. But that is something that seemed inconceivable the last couple of weeks and now back on the table. And we'll also talk to Des about him being a player in this league, in the NFL as well as in college football, and what it was like for him in educating people that didn't look like him and understanding the locker room in conversations and why it's different now in 2020 and people are more open to discussing race and speaking out on it in support of your teammates, as well as Harry Lyles. He's going to join us, fantastic ESPN college football writer, for his perspective and how players are voicing their opinions and how it's not just on the black athlete to speak out, why it's important for others to be advocates on speaking out for them when it comes to social injustice. A lot to cover, and enjoyed hearing the perspective from these two guys on a subject that's very important in this country, and we hope you enjoy it. It's great to have one of my favorite people joining us here in the College Football Podcast, 1991 Heisman Trophy winner, as well as a Super Bowl MVP and a Super Bowl champ. That is Desmond Howard of College Game Day joining us. And Des, I hope everybody's safe and well during the pandemic as it continues, as we get ready for the fall. It's great to have you here with us on the podcast.
Hey, Kev. Thanks. First of all, thanks. Everyone's doing well. We're very vigilant. We're fighting a good fight down here in one of the epicenters. So, everyone's in good spirits. Family's well. We're healthy. So, thanks for that, and thanks for letting me be a part of your podcast, man. Looking forward to this. It should be fun.
Love it. Love having your voice here because it's such a unique perspective. Because we're going to talk a little bit about the crazy football season in front of us, if we have a full season, and the concept of trying to pick a Heisman winner when you look at the choices and you eliminate two conferences, Power Five conferences, where you could at least see maybe potentially two or three guys emerging and elevating their names and their status in the Heisman Trophy race. And we won't even have them play a role here. But let's first start with what we're seeing in all of sports. And that is the reaction, 3 months after the death of George Floyd, the reaction after Jacob Blake was shot in Kenosha, Wisconsin, by police officers seven times. This was on Sunday. We're taping this on Friday, and we're seeing the college football world react and respond. Boston College in South Florida yesterday. They became the first two schools to cancel preseason practice to take part in a national discussion about social injustice. We saw Mississippi State, Kentucky, Baylor, and Western Kentucky. They have followed as well. Kentucky at one point left the practice field for a meeting of the team's Unity Council to kind of discuss the social issues that have galvanized athletes across the country. And I just think that if this was the week of football where we had games, we may have not seen games. What's your reaction to the voice of the student athlete, these college, you know, athletes now understanding and realizing that they have a place here where they can speak up and upon something that they feel is an injustice?
Well, Kev, I tell you what, there's a lot to unpack there, but I'll start off by saying that I've been a strong advocate for player empowerment. You know, I've talked about it countless times. I've been a lone voice out there, sometimes even on game day, talking about player empowerment and just what value that these players have and that they don't even understand it. I love the fact that they're finally finding their voice. They're realizing their power. I hate the fact that it's under these conditions in which they're finding their voice. So there's a kind of like a double-edged sword there for me. But since they are using their voice, you know, their voices, their collective voices for change and, you know, making sure that they're heard. And we got countless examples all across the country by different players from different universities who have made statements, who have demanded things, who have started to initiate some sort of change on some sort of level, whether it was Chuba Hubbard, you know, at Oklahoma State, you know, the nation's returning leading rusher. He didn't like the shirt that his head coach was wearing. You know, mm-hmm. He made a statement about that. You got Wilson up at Florida State, defensive tackle, one of the best in the nation. He didn't like the comment that his coach had said when his coach said Norvell, new coach of Florida State, said that he'd had discussions with each and every player. Wilson was like, no, sir. As a matter of fact, we will stop all football related activities until this is cleared up. I mean, just the boldness to even say that and like, no, we're not doing anything football related until you clear this up. And then, you know, the coach had to come back and kind of recant that comment and adjust it because it wasn't 100% factual accurate. So, you know, just across the board, Kylan Hill and his role in getting the Confederate emblem taken off the state flag in Mississippi. I mean, just like I say, it's great to see that these young men are finally realizing who they are. And more importantly, what their worth is to these universities. So it's a great thing. But under the circumstances in which they're finding their voice, that part is the issue that I wish it didn't come to this for them to finally realize who they are and what type of power that they have.
Some of the quotes that we are seeing coming in, like Kentucky offensive tackle Luke Fortner, he said he showed up at practice yesterday, ready to practice. And then he saw, you know, Jamar Boogie Watson, a guy that is very laid back, and he saw him visibly upset, and he saw other members in the team visibly upset, and they decided, hey, we got to do something else. We can't practice. And it led to the meeting with the Unity Council. How important, take me inside the locker rooms that you've been into. Like when I bring that up, because it's not just black voices we need to hear. It is right. When you see the reaction after George Floyd, you saw, white stars in the NFL, like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers speaking out, and then Matthew Stafford earlier this week of the Lions speaking out. How important, Ryan Tannehill speaking out, how important is it inside those locker rooms to share these kind of stories and understand what your brother is going through, and so you can relate to it, and then helps you then move forward and say, now I get why they're visibly upset.
Yeah, it's great to have allies, you know, and it's great that some of these guys are finally, you know, are getting it, that they get it, that they understand. I don't, you know, it's as a former professional football player, you wonder, okay, you always wonder what is it going to take. I mean, I'm 50 years old, Kevin. I've seen a lot. And the things I've seen, most of my white teammates, if not all of them, they've been mum. They've been quiet. They've been silent. So you always kind of think, okay, damn. I mean, like, what is it going to take? Like, how is it affecting me so greatly, but not affecting you at all? And if it is affecting you at all, you're not showing it. I mean, outside the fact that his complexion isn't your complexion, everything else is pretty much the same. This is a man. He has a family. He's a, you know, he's somebody's child. And, you know, you can go down the line. But the difference outside of, only other difference is that he has a different complexion than you. And so you always wonder, I mean, for me, I'm speaking for myself, I always wonder, damn, like, what would it take? How are you not feeling, you know, what I'm feeling and not expressing it? You know, so if you are feeling it, then express it. So to see now, finally, you know, I guess it took George Floyd for a lot of the these guys' teammates to realize that, yo, this is awful. And it's something that happens. This is not an isolated incident. Like, this happens at a recurring clip that's really awful in our community. So, you know, it's good to have allies, because I was telling a friend of mine the other day, I said, you know, we've been shouldering this load since the first slave ship docked, you know, so mm-hmm. it's good to have some allies, because that's the only thing that's going to create a change, is to have allies of every, you know, nationality, of every gender, of every, you know, race, color, creed, religion. We need to have allies across the board to make the change that's needed in this society that we're all been asking for the longest.
Yeah, that is so important. And listen, your generation is completely different. But it's not even just your generation. I mean, 4 years ago with the Colin Kaepernick situation, we didn't see any support for across, you know, outside of African Americans deciding to protest. We saw a couple of, you know, Chris Long showing support, right, with Malcolm Jenkins. But we didn't see the outspoken, prominent stars who are quarterbacks speaking out. And then I go back to the Fortner story. Because again, this is college football, and Fortner is white, and this is what he said. What I highlighted at the beginning of this meeting, this is the Kentucky Unity meeting, is that this is a human issue, right? So when Josh says that I need help, to all of his white teammates, if his white teammates are there to back him up, we can automatically begin to make a change in our community and reach out to everyone in the community, regardless of what color they are. And you sit there and you're like, this is a college young man who sees above and beyond. And maybe that is what sparks this generation for change here, because it's going across just the avenue of African Americans speaking out. And we have advocates all across the board who are understanding and realizing the moment. And I am curious to see how this plays out, because the reality is, Des, you know, and I know, it's going to happen again. That is why the community is tired, because this is not one instance. This is not two instances. It's just going to happen again. And when it happens again, and if it does happen again, hypothetically in the football season, God forbid, how will that play out on college campuses where I think that, you know, you are seeing students realizing they have the empowerment to say something if they're on campus. And do we have football games? Will games be compromised potentially in the NFL as we are now inside 2 weeks away? Now we're seeing NFL practices, something that we've never seen before. You've played with five teams. We've never seen NFL practices canceled for any reason. And now they were canceled this week. That's what stands out to me. And talking about, you know, leagues that will have games, let's go to another subject here about two conferences that won't have games. And specifically something that hits home, and that is the Big Ten. And the news, recent news, is 8 Nebraska football players have decided to file a lawsuit against the Big Ten seeking to invalidate the league's postponement of the fall football season and to award damages. This could be a formal thing. This could be just, we know nothing's going to come of it, but we're still going to move forward with it to express our unhappiness. What's your initial reaction to this? as this continues to be a big story in the Big Ten, but we're not hearing anything right. like this in the Pac-12.
That, and you hit it right on the head. You hit it right on the head. Like, why aren't we hearing anything of this magnitude coming out of the Pac-12? Like, nothing. These two conferences made the same decision on the same day, and all the fallout has been in the Big Ten. So that's a good point. That's a good, and it seems to come from the same source repeatedly too. I looked at it as a frivolous lawsuit, something to garner some more attention. I don't really think they want to play Big Bang takes Little Bank with the Big Ten conference. So I don't give it much weight. It's just one of those, what do you call it? Clickbaits, you know, clickbait, yeah. Attention grabbing headlines so people can click on it. I don't take it much further than that. So that's pretty much where I am with that. The eight players who are trying to sue the Big Ten from the same team.
Kevin Warren, the league commissioner, is taking a ton of heat. I come back to one thing, and I said this on the podcast last week. I think everybody forgets who are speaking out against Kevin Warren that it's the league presidents who made the decision. And the silence from the league presidents after the decision was made. Now, granted, communication was a major issue from Kevin Warren and the Big Ten in clarifying, especially what you saw with the Pac-12 and what they released the day of and their findings. But again, he has made sure to say they will not revisit this situation. And I still hear, you know, rumors that, they could still be coming back to play and you never know. What do you think is going through Kevin Warren's mind as a guy who's come in after a year into this job, unaware of what's going on, and then all of a sudden thrown in the middle of a pandemic? When I say unaware of what's going on, unaware that he would not have the backing or the public backing of many of these schools after this decision. I understand coaches speaking out because they're speaking to their players and their base. But the idea that presidents went silent after this and didn't have his public backing there, that just stands out to me.
Yeah, no, it stands out to me too. I think I was one of the rare voices out there who made that comment and made that point, because he just represents the presidents and chancellors of the universities. They're the ones that ultimately voted to postpone or cancel the fall season and postpone it to the spring. So, this is a guy who came into a situation. I don't know if he's been able to come up for air. He's been able to take since he took over this job, and really unprecedented times. There's no playbook, but I understood going into this decision early on that canceling or postponing the season was on the table, because on July 9th, when the Big Ten released it was like a presser saying that they were only going to play conference games. They were going to a conference only schedule, and they released that presser. At the same time, Kevin Warren made a statement that he said, "We are prepared to not play this season also, if that's the advice we get from our medical experts." And I'm paraphrasing. And so at that point, he was the only commissioner that would even put that on the table out there in public. So I said, okay, they understand, you know, the severity of this this COVID-19, and they're looking at the science and listening to the medical experts. So as opposed to just trying to do it as most analysts and most pundits would say, doing it for the money. They're going to have a season, you know, because everyone's in it for the money. You know, everyone's in it, the conference, the coaches, blah, blah, blah. So as opposed to going that route, which would have been, in my opinion, would have been the much easier route to take, they decided, along with the Pac-12, to cancel the season based on what their medical experts advised them to do. So it was a tough decision, but again, where are the chancellors? I mean, in the presidents, how about Penn State's athletic director?
Yes.
Sandy, she goes and she says, like, publicly, like in some sort of interview, that she didn't even know if there was actually a vote. Like, she didn't know if there was actually a vote. And she said, I'm like, how is she going to go out there to AD, Kevin, and say, I don't even know if there was a vote?
Yeah. Especially when Sandy Barber can just make a phone call to her president, right? Why make this public?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that because at that point there was so much negative publicity on Kevin Warren that maybe she was like hinting around to it was his fault. But I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know, listen, if you're the AD, your boss is your president, and mm-hmm. your president was part of the voting process. He was in that room or on that Zoom call or however they handled it. So he was one of the people who voted. You are throwing him under the bus because you're telling us that Penn State, that the communications lines at Penn State have been frayed or they're not as good as they should be because you can't pick up the phone and call your president just to verify if there was a vote. As a matter of fact, not only to verify if there was a vote, but to see how your president voted. So, yeah, I thought that Sandy threw her her president under the bus with that comment.
Yeah, it was. They made Kevin Warren the scapegoat, and it said, "Don't blame me. Don't blame me. I don't know. I don't have an answer. Don't look at me." Let's talk about.
I think that was an attempt too. Go ahead.
Yes, and let's talk about the unique situation here with the Heisman, because obviously two power conferences are out, and the idea of maybe seeing a race between Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields is a preseason hype, as two guys that knew each other back in high school and very close in the area from each other, and the decisions that they made on where they went to school and how Justin Fields blew up last year. This feels like it's Trevor Lawrence's to lose if we do have a season when it comes to the Heisman race, coming in with all the hype. But we have seen before, we've been surprised with Heisman winners the last few years out of nowhere. When you look at this list, and I'm going to throw out some names here, like the Trevor Lawrences, the Travis Etienne's, the Chuba Hubbards, Jalen Waddle. Is there a guy, I mean, you could even say, you know, Sam Ellinger and Ian Book. Is there a guy that you think could be a surprise? Or do you think the way this season's going to be shaped up, this is basically going to be Trevor Lawrence in a landslide?
Kevin, this is 2020, man. Anything is likely to happen, right?
Yes. You're right. 100%.
Man, brother, I'm trying to tell you, shoot, anything. I mean, the darkest of dark horses can win this one this year. It's just crazy. I was looking at it like, man, it may just be the last man standing, especially when you look at these positive COVID-19 cases that are starting to creep up on these campuses. It just might be the last man standing, despite what type of performance he had during the season. But, yeah, you're right, though. You hit it on the head with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, it's pretty much he has to lose, especially with Justin Fields out of the race. Trevor, you know, he's the guy everyone's going to be looking at. But the problem is, you also mentioned Travis Etienne, and Travis Etienne is Trevor Lawrence's running back. They're on the same team. So you always worry about two guys like that, two high-profile guys like that who can split votes. And then, you know, it'll hurt, you know, both guys' chances of winning it. Chuba Hubbard, you know, since he got things straight at Oklahoma State with his coaches and everything, you know he's going to put up some big numbers. He over 2,000-yard rush a year ago, and he, you know, he's playing in a conference in the Big 12 where he's going to get the ball a lot. You know, they run like damn near 100 plays a game, if not more. He's going to get a bunch of touches, so you know, statistically, he'll definitely be up there. But yeah, I really, really like Jalen Waddle. Jalen Waddle at Alabama is just such a multi-dimensional athlete. Like, he can hurt you in the kickoff game, punt return. He can run reverses. He can go deep. I mean, he can just hurt you from so many different positions. Like, he's just like a Swiss Army knife out there, just a hell of a weapon. He's also a guy to keep an eye on, especially if Alabama's going to do anything of any significance this year. I think he's going to play an important role in their success. So, yeah, keep an eye out for Jalen Waddle. But, brother, you have to dig deep. It would not surprise me if someone who we have not mentioned, who's not on anyone's top 10 list, come out and win it this year.
Yeah, it could be like a Kyle Trask. I mean, let's not forget
Let's not forget Joe Burrow was not mentioned. It could be even Ja'Marr Chase because we know the talent that he has. And when you look at the wide receivers, I know that this past year was touted as the one of the best wide receiver classes. But Ja'Marr Chase and Terrence Marshall and Jalen Waddle and what they have there. And you know what? Oh, I'm fascinated, too, that what's going to happen with the Georgia quarterback competition with Jamie Newman and JT Daniels. They're battling out, and one of them could get on a roll. Wouldn't you agree that unknown at Georgia could play such a big role in the race for the Heisman?
Man, I tell you what, and it's funny you mentioned that because I was just about to tell you. So you're talking about Ja'Marr Chase, who's won the Biletnikoff Award a year ago. You know, we don't know too much about the guy who's going to throw him the ball. I mean, don't forget, his quarterback won the Heisman, had the best season of a quarterback that we've ever seen, especially in recent times. So now he's got a guy who we don't really know too much about him, throwing the ball to Ja'Marr Chase. But there's another receiver in the SEC I want to tell you about named George Pickens from Georgia. In Georgia, this guy is an exceptional receiver. I mean, as a freshman, he was doing some ridiculous stuff out there on the field and in practice. So, so he's a guy who can actually jump out there and be in the race too, depending on which quarterback that they pick, as you were saying, that's going to throw him the ball. I really like his catching radius. He is extremely confident in his hands. Really good route runner, not great route runner. Nice vertical speed too, and just ultimately confident out there. I mean, that guy, when I was watching him, and he as a freshman looked like he was like a junior, man. It's just unbelievable. And now another year in this belt to get polished. So yeah, keep an eye on George Pickens too.
Yeah, and there are times last year that Kirby knows how talented Pickens is. He just wants to make sure he stays on the field. He's been in a little bit of trouble. It's just stay on the field, man. Because he brings a certain fire, man. The guy doesn't back down from anybody out there. And you made a great point that his catch radius is ridiculous. And I will add one more guy just because of the history of the head coach and the talent that this kid has, as he has waited patiently, is Spencer Rattler out of Oklahoma. Because how they have produced quarterbacks, what he has done, and Rattler comes in highly touted. That's a guy to keep an eye on as – Not on the top three, top four radar, but will jump in and could be in a race immediately by throwing up big numbers in the Big 12. Dez, always great to have you with us. And you know that whenever this is all settled and done, we will go grab some Indian food up here in Connecticut, my man.
My man, that's done. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
And it's great to have Harry Lyles Jr., ESPN college football reporter, back with us here on the College Football Podcast. So, Harry, when you look at the landscape of sports, activism is playing a huge role, but it's not just with words. It's not just with statements. It's the idea of, hey, we're not going to take part in anything today. And whether that's practice right now that we're seeing in the NFL, we're seeing as well as college football practices or the NBA and the WNBA, the MLS, Major League Baseball, or the NHL. And that's, hey, we're not going to play. That is our form of protest by not playing. How do you think this is going to affect college football? And I bring that up because the voices are becoming stronger and louder. And Boston College, South Florida, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Baylor, Western Kentucky, all yesterday, as we tape this, all yesterday saying, we're not going to practice. We're gonna actually have some conversation and open dialogue. And this is happening before a season. How do you think this is going to change now when we get into a season?
You know, that's a really good point, Kevin, because, you know, the thing with that is, and we saw what happened with, you know, the cancellation of the Pac-12 and Big Ten season. But, you know, in speaking to a number of Pac-12 athletes, not even just in football, but also in track and field and soccer, is they, you know, it wasn't completely because of this, but part of the reason that they felt they needed to cancel the season was because they do not want these cancellations and things like that going on during the year, right? Because that is going to affect the bottom line. It's going to make them address a lot of things that would have to be addressed in order for, you know, college football to be a more equitable place and an equal place. And So, you know, when you talk about all these cancellations that are going on right now, I think you've got a lot of coaches, ADs, and presidents who are like, hey, like, let's get all this out of the way right now, right? Because they do not want the Pac-12's problem. They don't want to have to answer for anything. They don't want to, you know, lose games. They don't want to upset, you know, their dollars and cents, which, mind you, I should be specific about that. Those are racist dollars and cents, because if you do not care about the livelihood of these Black athletes, then that makes you a racist. And I think that we need to start saying that. And as far as what this is going to look like during the season, it's going to be something that the schools will probably approve of ahead of time. And if not, they will try to co-opt it in order to help control the narrative and how the messages are delivered. That's the whole sham with the idea of like, hey, like athletes need to use their platform, right? Which, and that's not to say that players shouldn't speak out. What I mean by that is that either the college players, you know, should play, or WNBA, NBA players should play to use their platform. And it makes it easier for these institutions to take on the action and the message, and it keeps everything in order, right? And that's kind of like why you hear, like, you know, it was an amazing, amazing gesture that, truthfully, for, you know, me as a biracial individual who identifies as Black in America, made me emotional to see the NBA say, hey, or I want to be very clear about that. The players of the NBA decided they were not going to play because, you know, that's how you really send a message, right? Like, painting Black Lives Matter on a basketball court and letting these guys go out there and play only does so much, right? It is a good gesture. It gets kids asking questions that are watching the game, but we need to enact real change. And that's not to say that these things don't have value, like I said, but you have to hope that the people that are watching that are explaining those origins in good faith, and that real action towards tangible change is taken. And that's usually the result of the narrative being co-opted. So what we're going to see is a lot of kneeling. We're going to see a lot of holding hands. We're going to see, you know, signs that walk around the statement Black Lives Matter, right? It's going to say a lot of, you know, we need to fight against racial injustices of any kind, things like that, that is going to not upset people. And at the same time will be an effort to try to appease Black people, which is a very big problem.
Harry, what do you think the role, because I come back to one thing, when people are upset with NBA players, I come back to one thing. It is not their role to fix this. It is not correct. Their job to fix racism, because you can't fix racism, especially correct. 400 years. You can bring it to light and point it out. What do you think the role is when it comes to coaches, ADs, presidents, chancellors, as well as conference commissioners in this very volatile subject?
You know, this is going to sound like a really plain answer and almost like just insanely broad, but they have to care. I mean, I know you hear like the frustration in my voice, because this is tiring.
Yep.
This is really tired. What else do Black people have to say to get you to realize, like, yo, like, this is not like a trend. This is not a social media movement. This is a battle that we, first off, Black people didn't pick this, right? Like, we were put on boats literally on each other's backs. And for the ones that actually made it across the Atlantic Ocean, now had to wage this fight for our freedom, not even against people, for freedom. And we're still fighting that fight today. And all people really need to do, if they actually want to see change, and that is, I cannot underscore that enough, you have to actually want better for not just Black folks, but you have to want better for the world. I think the world would be a hell of a much better place if we all could just get along. We don't call each other names. There's no racism. All that kind of stuff. Like, I don't think anybody would really disagree with that. I think there's obviously people in the world out there who do right now, right? Those are the people who want players to shut the hell up and play football. But life would be so much easier if we really just genuinely cared for each other. And we're obviously seeing that we don't in many forms, including COVID-19 right now. But the role of these coaches, these ADs, these presidents, it needs to be, you have to care about other people who do not look like you. It was very, very disheartening. I think the statement was released yesterday around noon. I'm not sure on that timing, but Mark Emmert released a statement that said, you know, he's cool with peaceful protests and that players should vote. It's so exhausting to hear people who are not black telling black people in America to vote. You're not wrong with that sentiment, but you are also being disingenuous if you are not expounding on that. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I grew up in a very well-off neighborhood in the suburbs. I went to vote this past, whatever it was, June, July, all the days are mixing up now, obviously. I had no problem voting, right? Very well-off, majority white neighborhood. If you look in the predominantly black or diverse neighborhoods of Atlanta, the lines and the lack of voting machines and, mm-hmm. and lack of resources was just was honestly like it made me cry.
The voter suppression.
Because the voter suppression that is so key. So like if you're going to tell student athletes to vote, you cannot say that without mentioning this issue that is directly correlated to why they are fed up, because the voter suppression is still happening. John Lewis, one of my lifelong heroes, passed away this summer, and we are still fighting the same fight that they kicked in his skull over. So America, coaches, ADs, administrators, they have to decide that we're just done with this, because I think everybody kind of needs to realize black folks don't like having this conversation either. So until we decide we want to do better, we're going to keep doing this.
And one thing that we are seeing from schools, you know, specifically we saw it in early June, is, you know, Georgia Tech and their athletic department deciding that, okay, it's a mandatory day off on election day to encourage and give the opportunity to vote. And we've seen, you talk about where you live in Atlanta, the Hawks opening up their arena for a place where you could vote, you know, where you could take public transportation and you have the opportunity to go there. Let's hope universities look into that possibility, or because again, the ability to vote, maybe not the question, it's the, where can I go to vote? And making sure it's official. And we have seen that was running rampant in Georgia. And it was a big storyline this summer on the ability of where you could go and polling places being open and the long lines in certain areas. The administrative level is one thing. And when I posed that question to you, it wasn't so much about how can they end racism. It's this conversation, to keeping the conversation going and actually listening on the other side. We have seen coaches this summer understand now the gravity of players becoming unified, right? And not just from one team. It's team to team. It's conference to conference. How do you think that's going to play a role here long term in this upcoming season, if there is an issue, if there is potentially, God forbid, and as I mentioned this with Desmond Howard, the reason why people are tired is because it's not one instance. You hold your breath on when the next instance is going to happen. And enough is enough, and but you're just wondering, is it going to happen again and again and again? And I come back to that it's not a matter of if it's going to happen; it's a matter of when it's going to happen. How do you think coaches should approach this if moving forward we were to see something horrific happen again to an African American when it comes to a shooting, and the video is out there and suddenly it goes viral?
You know, I think the first step is to listen, obviously. Listen to your black players, because I really think that people don't truly understand like how this affects black people in America. I really don't think they get a full, you know, grip on that, which is okay, because, you know, you're not black, you wouldn't know. But you need to listen. And, you know, there's been a whole lot of lip service about mental health this offseason, right? Whether that's you're trying to make the argument that players should play or shouldn't play, whatever. But black mental health is a very serious, serious thing right now, speaking from personal experience. And I think that in listening to the players, one, and two, doing what they want, right? if something were to happen on a Friday and they don't want to play on a Saturday, don't force them to go out there on that football field. Just don't. This means more than football. And, you know, I know that a lot of people are going to listen to this podcast. They're going to hear that and they're going to be very frustrated with that. And you know what? I can't change your mind. I can't make you want better for Black people. I can't make you want better for America. But these coaches really are going to have to listen to their players, because, you know, the faster we can get behind all this, the sooner we can just start playing football, right, and sticking to sports and doing this and that and the other. But we're living in a world right now that does not allow that. And I, you know, you've seen this quote float around on Twitter a lot, that sports are the reward of a functioning society, and we're not a functioning society right now. So if something like that were to happen, man, I really just hope that these coaches would, you know, just kind of put their guard down and listen to their guys. That's all you can do.
And Howard Bryant, ESPN.com writer, brilliant writer, talked about just this is ownership of the Black athlete and their bodies and trying to be human. View them as human first before viewing them as an athlete for your entertainment. Mm-hmm. And more and more we're seeing people react and respond to the reaction of players instead of the actual act and what caused their reaction. And that's the most upsetting thing about this long term. Harry, your perspective on this is really important to us here to I think better understand, to better educate, and to better honestly prepare ourselves, because, you know, I brought this quote up here a couple times and it stands out, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. It's inside an Adam Rittenberg article, and I brought it up with Desmond Howard earlier on the podcast, where he talks and details offensive tackle Luke Fortner of Kentucky. He was prepared to practice yesterday, and he realized that seeing some of his teammates upset, visibly upset at what was going on, it led to a meeting of the Unity Council with the team. And Fortner specifically said, and he's white, said, he highlighted in the meeting that this is a human rights issue. This is a human issue. And we need to help. If the white teammates are there to back up all the Black teammates, automatically it begins to make a change in our community and reach out to everyone in the community, regardless of what color they are. And I come back to this is a Kentucky offensive tackle. And if he makes a statement like this, realizing his room, and we've seen Trevor Lawrence speak out a couple of times, the power of the white athlete in the college football space, because we've seen NFL players speak out as well with, you know, most recently this week, Matthew Stafford and Ryan Tannehill, especially the quarterback role. Can you give me an idea of your perspective of the importance of having the white athletes on the college football level speak out publicly and also understand the locker room and understand that this is important to players that they consider brothers?
Yeah, I mean, if you really think about it, and just to kind of put this in plain terms, right? Black folks are all on the same page. You know, like you might find half of 1% who, you know, for whatever reason, would not like to change things. That's fine. But the majority of Black folks are on the same page here. And where the change is going to come in a country that, you know, historically is majority white, you need those voices, because that's where the question lies. Right? Like that's where the only indifference is at. And that's not to say that there's not people of other races who are racist towards Black people in America. But when we're talking about the crux of the issue, it has been, you know, the white individuals of this country that have, you know, put us in this position. And, you know, to have those voices helps, because I think a pill that's very hard to swallow for people is that this is going to take many generations to fix. The last person, I always bring this example up just to kind of like give people context, because I think some people like to think it's not that recent, and we're not even talking about the civil rights movement here. the last person in the United States born into slavery, right? Born into slavery, died in 1976. That's not long ago. Born into slavery, right? Wow. And we're going to need generations to wipe out that hatred. Because that is not a long time ago for somebody in the United States to be born into slavery. Like this is not a distant thing. This is a recent thing. This is an ongoing thing, right? And so to have any white voice that genuinely wants to make change. And I would also like to note this too, because I think a lot of white people in America are afraid to speak up that mean well, and they don't know how to articulate what they're either trying to say or like that they do want to help, or they don't know that certain things that they have been told, even in terms of the advancement of these issues, is not good. I want those people to keep speaking up and to surround themselves with people who genuinely mean well, because I don't really get upset if I hear somebody who I know is actually trying to make a difference. I simply try to correct them, be like, hey, it's okay you didn't know, but maybe you should try to explain this or that way. Because you can immediately tell, Kevin, when somebody's arguing in bad faith, right? Like somebody does not have to have a rap sheet to, like, that does not justify somebody like Jacob Blake getting shot in the back 7 times. It just doesn't. And so for those people, if you're listening to this and you're white and you're trying to help, but you're afraid of saying the wrong thing, you know, just as long as you're trying to advance, like keep going, ask somebody. Educate yourself, read a book. Highly recommend Ta-Nehisi Coates, Jelani Cobb. There are great Black educators out there who could say all these things a million times more eloquently than I can. But to have those white voices on teams, especially somebody, you know, like Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, we've been talking about Trevor Lawrence being the top draft pick in the NFL draft for the past 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, I love having Trevor Lawrence speaking out about this stuff, even if he doesn't say everything that needs to be said. Because I also don't think that should be anybody's responsibility necessarily. But for him to speak out on this and to stand with his teammates is a big step. Because there are a lot of people who see these Black athletes as nothing more than athletes, but they might also see Trevor Lawrence as nothing but an athlete. But if they see Trevor Lawrence standing with his Black athletes in this moment, I don't care if that only changes 2 or 3 people's minds who may have felt otherwise. I'll take those. Because this is going to be a long process. It has been a long process. But we need any kind of people that we can get. So if Trevor Lawrence standing next to his, you know, Black teammates and saying that Black Lives Matter is only going to convert a few people, I'll take those few. And same with the Kentucky lineman. If he's going to speak out, he's going to get a lot of hate. His teammates are going to get a lot of hate. But if he changes 3 or 4 minds, I will take those 3 or 4 minds. Because that is 3 or 4 more than we had before. And those are the voices that we are going to need to advance the change. It is much more the responsibility, to be quite honest with you, of white people than it is the responsibility of Black people, because we are not marginalizing ourselves. And I think that we could all agree that the sooner we can never have this conversation again, the better.
Harry, excellent stuff. Appreciate you joining us here on a topic that hits home. For many, and to have your perspective was really important. And I hope we could talk football in the coming weeks. A lot of breaking news. It feels like every day is a very fluid situation in the sports world, but especially in the next 2 or 3 weeks with college football right around the corner. And we'd love to have you back on the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, sir. I'd be happy to do it.
Big thanks to Harry Lyles for his thoughts, his passionate thoughts, and his perspective, as well as Desmond Howard sharing his opinions on a variety of topics as we continue to follow this story surrounding the Big Ten. And and maybe they're playing football a little bit sooner than we expected in the fall. Of course, taping this, SportsCenter will have complete coverage of this, how this develops, a fluid situation. And once again, a reminder that the podcast returns next Monday. And Kirk Herbstreit will join us with his thoughts about
a summer we've never experienced before and what we can expect in the fall. And we'll talk football, I promise, and break down some stuff that we could look forward to later on in September as we get closer to real kickoff and real games this weekend and next weekend. And big thanks to Taylor Schwenk as well for always making sure that we've dotted the I's and crossed the T's and making sure we get the guests and the timing is right. And he's been fantastic on the other side for us with this college football podcast during the summer. So can't wait for next week. Can't wait to see what happens with decision-making process in the Big Ten. And if you want football, wear a mask. Stay safe and enjoy the rest of your summer.